They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Well, couldn't remember the name before we started, so that's that. Anyway, hey!
Good start, Elliot.
Thanks. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. I'm here in our Kansas City offices, me being Elliot Moglianes, coming at us from the abandoned Indianola offices. Nathan has snuck back in to do a little bit of work, Nathan Moglianes being the co-host. Nathan, Megalopolis is upon us. It has landed like, I don't know, like a large piece of poop splashing into the toilet.
That's how Megalopolis
has landed. Reviews are very poor. It is no longer split down the middle. It's like a 60-40 split in favor of negative. And that's just the critics. The audiences, when they have shown up, which is very rare, they have been even less favorable. And speaking as someone who has now seen this $100 million vanity project of Francis Ford, I can say that the audiences are absolutely in the right. This is probably the worst movie I've seen this year.
Wow.
It is the closest thing I've ever seen to a movie that's so bad that it's good. I fully expect that it will take its place amongst The Room and Troll 2 and Birdemic, Shock and Terror as cult classics that people watch because they're unintentionally hilarious. And it is unintentionally hilarious. Like, there were times in this movie where I was wheezing, trying to keep from laughing and disrupting my fellow theater goers' experience. Although, because there were like three other people in the theater and they were laughing too. So maybe we all could have had a little bit of communion over that. But yeah, if you want my full thoughts, I have written a review for it. By the time this video goes live, it will be published on the blog. This is 100% guarantee. It's not like my other guarantees. It's already written. It is scheduled to be published at 10 o'clock on Friday. So go ahead and give that a read.
Yeah. But,
so Nathan hasn't seen Megalopolis, so I'm assuming he doesn't have much in the way of commentary there. But now that Francis Ford has failed us, we turn now in our desperation to our champion, Todd Phillips, with what is sure to be another instant classic in Joker Folie à Deux. I think that comes out
this week.
I think it comes out tomorrow.
Yep.
So Thursday, on the day that we're recording this.
Yeah.
Nathan, how excited are you for this? On a scale of 9 to 10, where do you fall?
I guess if I'm limited to that, it's got to be a 9. For me.
Well, that's still pretty excited.
Yeah, I haven't gone around to Megalopolis yet. I'm kind of excited to see it because I do think I am one of the most generous audience members a person can possibly have in a movie. There's nothing I want more when I watch a piece of art than for that art to be good. And I have been known to kind of bend myself into knots in order to convince myself that it was good, especially in theaters. I'm very, very prone to being very positive towards movies when I see them in the theaters, and only later kind of coming down from that. So I'm excited to see Megalopolis. I'm interested to what my reaction is going to be. I am not excited at all for Joker 2. to be honest, I'm kind of thinking about just skipping it. The reviews have been bad enough, and my desire to not give Todd Phillips money is strong enough that I'm honestly considering just not seeing it. The reviews have been terrible. All of them speak to things that would definitely annoy me in a movie. So, yeah, if it's 10 to 9, it's a 9. If it's 10 to 1, it's got to be maybe a 0. I am so not looking forward to this movie.
You know, I think maybe one of my favorite moments from the Oscars is when Bong Joon-ho won for Best Director, and he was lavishing praise on Scorsese. And then, like, at the last minute, he said, Todd Phillips, another director I admire. And it's so obviously just, like, a bit of politeness that he's throwing him in there, but I found it really funny.
I mean, it was politeness that got Todd Phillips that Best Director nomination, because that was an egregious... I think looking back, that's one of the worst picks. I can't remember who all else was nominated, but I am pretty sure it was all, like, living legends and then Todd Phillips.
Yeah, I can't remember. I just remember Scorsese,
and Phillips. I think I do know who. Wasn't it Bong Joon-ho? Oh, shoot, maybe I don't know. Quentin Tarantino? Because Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Ugh.
Martin Scorsese? Gosh, I'm trying to think. Maybe Greta Gerwig for Little Women? And Todd Phillips? I'm not sure. We're not going to fact check.
Well,
let's, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. No one cares.
Bogged down. Yeah.
Nathan's a hater. He's a Todd Phillips skeptic. I can't even imagine why that might be when Todd Phillips has given us nothing but the best years of his life. The blood and the sweat of his brow it can't be argued with. Todd Phillips is a genius and a master. Good job,
wow.
Todd. But, so Nathan, there are a few trailers that you want to talk about if you still think we have the time for that, because we're running along here.
I just wanted to talk about one trailer in particular, Clint Eastwood's next movie, Juror Number 2. Has received its first trailer. I believe it's going to be out in like November or something. So there's very minimal marketing for this thing. But I am very excited for this. The trailer got me even more excited for it. The premise, if you care to know, I'd say just watch the trailer because I think it does a great job of selling the premise and selling the moral question at the center of the film. But I'm very, very excited for it. Really talented cast. Nicholas Holt is playing the lead, and he hasn't played the lead in a ton of things, but I think he looks great. J.K. Simmons is in it, and he's always fantastic. Toni Collette, another great supporting actor who's turned in a ton of amazing performances, including, not to spoil anything, a performance in the movie we're about to talk about, but... I'm very, very... The trailer got me much more excited for the movie, so I'm looking forward to this November, man. I mean, Saturday night, Juror Number 2, I'm going to be having a party. And that party will consist of me going to movies.
Yeah, I have not seen that trailer. I think that movie sounds interesting. We'll see if Clint can... pull it off. I mean, does he even know who he is anymore? He's like 96 years old or something.
Dude, he's going strong. I've seen him. Yeah, it's crazy. If you want to know how insane it is that Clint Eastwood is still making movies and still seemingly making movies that people like, or, I haven't seen The Mule, but it's received positive reactions from some people. Clint Eastwood has the distinction of being the oldest Oscar winner for Best Director of all time, and he won that 20 years ago. Just to put into perspective how crazy it is that he's maintained just the energy and the verve and the vim and the vigor and all of the V words to direct at his age. It's really stunning. So I hope this movie is good, because let's put that record out of the reach of anyone. If he wins Best Director at 94, that you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. I guess if he had stopped earlier, then we wouldn't have even got The Mule or Richard Jewell. And what a shame that would be.
Or American Sniper. Come on, man.
American Sniper, Cry Macho. He's just cranking them out, man.
The man loves making movies. He's like Ridley Scott, but, you know, a bit more even-tempered sometimes.
Really?
Okay, anyway.
Clint Eastwood? I think they're about even, at least.
Okay. Anyway, let's maybe pivot to talking about the movie, Elliot. We don't have time to blather about bantering all day. I'll do the intro for this one. Today we're talking about 1999's The Sixth Sense. If you have heard of a gentleman known as M. Night Shyamalan, then you have most likely also heard of his most well-known movie, The Sixth Sense. I'm just going to say right here, we are going to spoil the movie, so if you have somehow not seen The Sixth Sense and not had it spoiled, I would say, you know, maybe go and watch it and then listen to the rest of this episode, because we will be spoiling the film. Anyway, this is a very acclaimed movie. It was nominated for, I believe, 6 Academy Awards, including picture, director, editing, screenplay, supporting actress for Toni Collette, and supporting actor for Haley Joel Osment, who plays the young boy in the movie. If you're not at all familiar with it, it follows a child therapist as he's tackling a new case, trying to figure out what is ailing this child and how he can help this child deal with some of his inner demons. And over the course of the film, we discover some of those inner demons are kind of outer demons, not to spoil things. But yeah, The Sixth Sense, that's what we're talking about. That's the deal. Elliot, what is your history with this movie? And if you want to, feel free to, you know, trickle down some first thoughts with that history.
Yeah, so I watched this movie for the first time with you, Nathan, quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I already knew about this movie's myriad plot twists. This movie, it's so hard to preserve that that first time viewing experience, because the movie is so well known and its different plot points have just seeped into popular culture itself, that I can't even imagine someone going into the movie not knowing what's going to happen. But who knows? I mean they found that one guy who hadn't seen Star Wars or had only seen an X-Wing or something. So you never know. But it doesn't matter. The point is that when I first saw this movie, I was like, yeah, all right, not bad. Very creepy, but palatable. And yeah, I think that it really was difficult for me watching the movie knowing everything that happened, or most of the major plot points. So this is the second time that I've seen this movie, and I gotta say, I thought it was excellent. I really liked its pacing. I thought it was so well paced, how it builds up to all these reveals. I thought that the horror elements were very, very effective here. They were getting me a little unsettled, to be honest. But more than that, I just found it a very compelling, engaging, and at times emotionally moving story about a troubled young boy finding his voice with the help of a lot of strong, loving, supportive figures. I found this movie to be strangely heartwarming by the end. And yeah, I thought it was excellent. And technical elements, they're all there. M. Night, for all his many foibles as a writer, I think has never really slipped as a director, at least in the movies that I've seen from him, including the recent ones. Like, it pains me to say anything good about Glass, but the movie is well shot. That's it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my first impression.
Wow. I'm so excited that you feel the way, because I feel the exact same, both in my initial impressions on first viewing, that I was fairly nonplussed by the movie, don't remember thinking too positively or too negatively about it, and I really, really enjoyed it for all of the things that you just said. I thought it was way creepier than I remembered it being. I found it much more heartwarming than I remember it being. And yeah, I agree. I think Shyamalan's weakest elements is usually his writing of dialogue. And I found huge chunks of this movie to be really, really well written and affecting in every sense of the word. I really, really enjoyed this. So I'm really glad that you also enjoyed it. Otherwise, we'd be having one of our infamous fight episodes where we squabble like children.
Well, we can put away our knives and our guns, because today we are brothers. So Nathan, this is your episode. Tell us where you want to start. Let's commence with the praising of The Sixth Sense.
Well, I think I want to start by talking about some of the technical elements, but also just the construction of the story of the movie. Because I think, like we already said, a lot of the twists in the movie are known. The final twist is one of the most famous twists probably in film history. The mid-movie twist is arguably not even a twist, because I think I was aware of the line that reveals the twist almost before I was aware of the movie itself. So I think it's kind of hard to understand how well crafted the movie is in terms of setting up all of these emotional payoffs in these twists. And it's an example of a movie that has twists built out of not lying to you, not tricking you. At no point does the movie show you something that isn't 100% actually what is happening. It never does something like that. And that's my biggest pet peeve with movies that try to pull off crazy twists, is that they'll show me something that they then later reveal was just completely fake. And it's like, wow, you didn't see that coming, did you? And it's like, no, you're right. You really got me with that one. It's kind of hard for me to guess when you do stuff like that. But this movie is so fantastic. It is so built into its DNA is the knowledge that you as the viewer are going to overlook questionable elements, because you're just going to be like, yeah, it's a movie. So, you know, how does Cole survive getting shot at the beginning? I don't know. But in the next scene, he's walking around and he's alive. Why would I question what the movie is showing me? Why doesn't anyone other than, Malcolm Crowe, that's his name.
Malcolm is his name. Cole is the kid's name.
Yeah. Why don't we ever see Crowe talking to anyone other than Cole? Again, it's a movie, and they give you enough scenes with him with other people to, you know, kind of trick you. But I just think the structure of the movie in terms of setting up the payoffs were so, so good. And easily my two favorite scenes in the movie were the scenes with the payoff, the reveal of what is ailing Cole, what is causing Cole to have these issues is so fantastic. And then the final reveal of Malcolm's morality status, again, it's so fantastic. And I had such a fun time watching the movie and watching all of these tricks kind of play out in front of him.
Yeah, it's mortality, not morality.
My bad. Sorry, I really enjoyed this movie.
I remember talking to Dad about this twist and him saying that he did not guess it. I think a lot of people didn't, which is one of the reasons why it's so iconic, is because it comes out of left field. Or it doesn't come out of left field, but people just didn't guess it. But he said that he distinctly remembers finding it weird that when Cole comes home from school and Crow and his mother are sitting across from each other, they're not talking. They're just staring at each other. But, I mean, it's really amazing, the power of the human mind to reconcile incongruities to what we already deeply believe to be true. And I think you're right that the best twists, like the twist in Arrival, just play off that. They use that like biological fact about human psychology to their benefit, and they just like give you the rope you need to hang yourself with, and so you never figure it out. I'm surprised to hear you say that those were the best scenes in the movie for you. I had no issue with them, but honestly, my favorite scenes in the movie, and maybe this is just a reflection of the things that I found most compelling about it this time around, were the scenes where Malcolm was just being a good dude, helping Cole out, and being really nice, talking to him. I really liked the scene, that scene where Cole comes home from school and they play the game where Cole will step towards Crow if Crow says something true, like reads his mind, quote unquote, and will step away if Crow says something false. I don't know if that's an actual trick in child psychology, but I think in this case it doesn't really matter because it is believable as something a psychologist would do in order to access the mind of someone whose mind isn't fully formed yet, to sort of gamify the experience. And also, just like the diligence and the compassion. I mean, man, I'm getting a big old warm feeling in my stomach just thinking about it. The diligence and the compassion with which Malcolm goes about his task trying to help Cole. It just warms my heart, man. I just really liked it.
Well, and it's you know, not to cut you off here, but it's born out of, again, another element that keeps you from kind of guessing the twist, because it's born out of Malcolm failing to help a child who was very similar to Cole, who we discover actually had the same exact issue as Cole. And I think that's just another element where, like, that's such a classic story, right? Where a character fails one person and then tries their hardest in a later season to succeed where they had previously failed. That they feel like they owe something to this previous person to work as hard as they can. I mean, that's such a classic story that, again, we instantly accept it as, like, that's the story that's happening here, as opposed to the real story, which is kind of Malcolm both coming to peace with his failures in life, one of those failures being a failure to communicate to his wife, but then also a failure to really meet this previous child where he was at, in the way that he does with Cole.
Mm-hmm. I would now like to talk about, as long as we're kind of staying in the formal elements of the movie, I'd like to talk about the horror aspects of the movie. Because I wouldn't necessarily call this a horror movie. There are definitely parts of it that are scary, but I would say it is closer to like a dramatic thriller than a horror movie. I don't know. It's a little difficult to classify. But because this movie deals with ghosts, in case I don't think we've actually verbalized what's going on yet, the thing is that Cole can see dead people, and that's what has left him so damaged and also is the cause for a lot of his odd behavior, is he can see ghosts. And it seems like only ghosts who have died violently or tragically.
Well, it's ghosts who have business continuing on Earth. Like, it's all ghosts who have some sort of issue, is what we discover through the course of the movie, is that it's all ghosts who still have something they need to communicate to someone who's alive, who still have something they need to, some sort of thing that's keeping them from being at peace, is my sense of what was happening.
Wow, dude, that's rough, because that means that those ghosts in the school have just been there for 200 years. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That is too bad for them. But yeah, so the fact that it is ghosts obviously lends itself to some scary things happening. And the crazy thing is that it's not necessarily that the scares are, like, particularly well-crafted. Because mostly what it is just seeing people in bad situations. People who are hanging, people who have been shot accidentally. I guess to me, and what gets me in horror movies is the sense of the uncanny of something that looks normal but is being formulated or somehow altered in such a way as to defamiliarize it. And so for me, I think it is partly the way that it's built up. I'm thinking particularly of, like, the first scene after we learn that Cole sees dead people. We get to see what that looks like. And the first one he sees is this woman who he thinks is his mother. And she turns around and she's all bruised and she starts yelling at him. Like, she says, dinner is not ready yet. And she, like, shows him that she's slit her wrists. The implication obviously being that she was in an abusive relationship and ended up committing suicide. And I don't know, man. It's like, I'm honestly getting goosebumps right now talking about it, because the buildup is really good, that you see this woman who you think is Cole's mother. And then when she turns around and shows you all this stuff, I don't know. I can't really nail down why it was so effective for me, but part of it, I think, is due to the fact that it's shot so well, that the initial shot of her is, like, right at Cole's level. So she's, I don't know, maybe 6 or so feet away from the camera, probably a little bit more than that. And we're seeing her at a bit of a low angle, and just something that simple is enough to put me in the movie, not just in the movie, but in the character shoes of being a small child who's in this situation that, yeah, I was just like, my skin was crawling and I was like, oh man, that's terrible. I love it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's so scary because the movie does such a good job of putting you in Cole's shoes. And I think it's done a great job of, again, this is well over halfway through the movie when we finally get this reveal of why Cole is being the way he is. So we've had so much discussion already, and we've been able to see kind of scenes of Cole having difficulty, you know, dealing with the real world because of what he's seeing in the real world, right? He's seeing these people who are just in various states of dismemberment and damage. And they're all saying very aggressive, angry things at him. So when we finally see what he's been seeing, I think we're very willing to fully comprehend how psychologically damaging this thing is for him. And so it's kind of psychologically damaging for us. I'll be honest, I fell asleep the night I watched this movie, and I was like, if I see anything even remotely approximating a person in my apartment that only I should be in, I'm gonna go catatonic. I'll pass out from fear. Like, so the idea that a child would...
At least then you wouldn't have to deal with it. You would be asleep.
Yeah, like, the idea that a child would have to, on a nightly basis, have to go to sleep with the knowledge that anyone he sees in his house could be, you know, somebody missing half their head who's gonna yell at him about, you know, what their father is doing, that's terrifying. That's a horrifying thought to, you know, have to grapple with. And I think the movie does such a great job of bringing that concept to life in a way that makes it just as scary for us, the audience.
Yeah, and I mean, you said there that this all comes in like halfway through the movie. And I gotta say that one of the great sorceress magic tricks ever performed in a movie is to have this movie be 100% engaging all the way through and to feel tonally and thematically consistent across what is essentially an entire genre shift, or at least a genre tweaking. And I don't know why that is. Like, I can't offer you any kind of artistic formal analysis. I don't know why that is, but this movie is 100% engaging all the way through, and it does not feel tonally or thematically disjointed after it goes full-on supernatural ghost story.
Well, I think that's because, and maybe this is a good way to pivot, I think that's because the characters are so well drawn and so well done. We've already kind of talked about how Malcolm is just a great character, that he's, you know, going above and beyond for this child, which is always something we love to see. We love to see people helping children. They're having a tough time of it, usually. And I think Bruce Willis is really good in the role, but I think all of the characters are so well done. Haley Joel Osment is like insanely good as Cole. It's crazy to me that children could be this good at acting, because, you know, children usually aren't good at anything. I mean, they're children. They're still learning how to like write and count and stuff. And Haley's out here getting nominated for Oscars. That's crazy. I also really like Toni Collette as Cole's mother. That I think she's another fantastic element of the movie, that much like Malcolm, she is trying her best to love her son well, but she's facing so much difficulty in that, right? Like, he's not opening up to her. She's not able to understand or see what is causing him to have the issues that he's having. And so she's clearly very stressed. She's working multiple jobs, it seems. It's never super clear, and maybe I didn't pay enough attention, but his father is not in the picture for whatever reason, and so she's having to, you know, carry a lot of a very large burden. And I think the movie does so well with, you know, that she's both very loving towards Cole, but she has moments where it's clear that the stress is kind of coming out in a way where she's not able to connect with Cole or help him as well as he could be. That in the one scene where he sees some freaky thing and then he wants to sleep in her bed, it's really obvious that that's like tough for her, that she doesn't want to have to do this, that she'd rather you know, be able to sleep without someone who's going to be, you know, causing a ruckus or something. And I think it's just so well done. It's just such a great character that Toni Collette does just such an amazing job with in the performance camp. And so I think it's the characters are the reason why the movie doesn't ever feel like it breaks, because all of them are so well written and well done that we're invested in the story no matter how many genres it goes through.
Yeah. I think there's at the very least a significant element of truth to that. And I do really like all of these characters. Toni Collette looks so young in this movie. Oh my gosh. Because the last time I saw her was in a clip of Hereditary, and she did not look like that.
Well, she's having a bad time in Hereditary. She's she's going through even more troubling ghost things in that movie than in this movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to add there. I think that these characters are very well done, and they're very simple. Not very simple, but they are simple. But I don't think that that's in any way a problem for the movie, because sort of similar to when we reviewed The Father, This is kind of just a really miserable situation that a bunch of people are trying their best to navigate. And sometimes they don't do very well. Sometimes they hurt each other, or they're not very patient with each other, or they try to walk away. But what matters is that they stick to it. And there's something innately compelling and moving about that. And then when you add on to that, the performances and the inherent likability of these characters, even when they're making poor decisions, it just carries you through, because you want to spend more time with them. You want to learn more about them. You want to see how it all happens, how it all ends. So yeah, this movie has such great characters. It honestly baffles me what happened to M. Night to leave him where he is today.
Look, it's hard to write good characters forever, okay? You know, sometimes you only have one really good batch of writing in you.
Well, that may be true. But we're not here to litigate that. We can litigate M. Night's skill as an actor, oof, which I would describe as mediocre. but he's got like a 20-second cameo in this. And he always has talking cameos in his movies. It's not like he's just in the background. Like, he plays a named character, which I always find a little bit funny. But it's not as egregious as Quentin Tarantino, because Quentin Tarantino is a much worse actor.
Well, and it's weird that both of these directors insist on doing cameos, because to my knowledge, the director that they're probably taking this from is Alfred Hitchcock, who cameos in most of his movies, but he cameos in a non-speaking role in almost all of them. Like, he's always just in the background where it's like, whoa, dude, that big bald guy is Alfred Hitchcock. Yeah.
That fat guy walking his dog, that's the director.
Yeah, so it's weird that they saw, like, oh, it's the director doing a cameo, and they were like, oh, then that has to be, like, a meaty role. Like, I need to impact the plot. Yeah, I think we already talked about the technical elements, but I just have to say that there's a lot of really neat shots in this movie that I really got a kick out of. There's a mirror shot. I'm a sucker for mirror shots. I love shots where things are happening in a mirror, because it's just so neat in my mind. There's a really cool one-er when they introduce Cole and his mother, where it kind of follows his mom getting ready and then coming back to the kitchen to discover some ghostly shenanigans have taken place. And it's not a super long one, but it's just really fun to see something that probably had more than a couple moving parts, including a dog. And dogs are, you know, not great at obeying commands always. There was another really neat one-er later in the ring shop when we kind of are following Malcolm as he's stalking his wife and discovering that she's kind of seeing someone else, which he takes to be that she's cheating on him, not realizing that he's dead and she's in fact grieving his loss, which is another, they have almost like a complete, really well done arc for like Malcolm's wife. She doesn't get to do much, but like we see so much of her grieving process through Malcolm following her, and it's like maybe the banner for my entire reaction of watching this movie is like, wow, this is way more compelling and heartwarming than I remember it being. Like, this is really, really good. So,
yeah. Oh, sorry, are you not done?
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, I think this movie's really well shot. There's not a whole lot else we can do other than just talk about moments that we liked, where the camera was doing good stuff. But I do want to call out the shot of Malcolm writing down the Latin translation or the English translation of the Latin that Cole said to him in the church, and his hand is in the way. And that's such a simple trick of just obscuring something. And yet, I mean, I'm just a kid at heart, because it worked on me. Like, I was like, oh, what are you writing? Move your hand. I can't see. What's it going to be? Yeah, I really like that stuff. I already talked about how I feel the camera work contributes to the horror elements in putting us in the scene. And like, again, what a headline. Immersion makes scary things scarier, but that's what happens, and it's done very well. It's happening in this movie. The music was musical. I didn't really notice it very often, except for, again, in a horror sequence when Cole sees the ghost of a young boy saying, I'll show you where my dad keeps the gun. And then when he turns around, like, the entire back half of his head is missing, and there's a little violin spike. And it's another moment where I was like, oh no, that's quite frightening. I was frightened. And I watched this morning at like 9 o'clock. So
wow.
It wasn't exactly in an environment that was amplifying the effects of the scares, but they were still there, which I think just, it speaks to the effectiveness that M. Night does have and potentially could still have as a director of horror or horror adjacent stuff.
Yeah, I think, I guess before I get to what negatives I might have, the one thing that I do, we've already mentioned that the movie is kind of surprisingly heartwarming and very enjoyable to see, but one line that really jumped out at me as almost a thesis for the entire movie was when Cole's mother and Cole were having breakfast or dinner or something, they were eating something, and his mom was just talking about like, hey, it's, you know, it's very difficult for me working like multiple jobs and trying to take care of you. And she says something along the lines of, I guess we're just going to have to answer each other's prayers. So like, we're going to have to do, like, we keep waiting for something good to happen, but maybe we're going to have to be the good that happens, which I think is at maybe the core of the movie, is that it's like, hey, maybe reach out and like do some good, that Cole discovers that all the ghosts are coming to him because they have some unfinished business. And so he decides to be very brave. Again, we've already highlighted how scary and disturbing these ghosts are. So the thought of a child having to, you know, overcome his fear to have a conversation with them to try and figure out how he can help them receive some peace, I think is a very compelling idea. And then the sequence where he goes to this girl's funeral and he finds a tape that shows that, I don't know if it was her mother or someone was poisoning her, and he gives that to her father to be able to find some justice for this act. And I thought it was a great sequence. Not to mention, the guy who played the dad was an incredible actor. For someone who's not in the movie very much, I found his performance as he was watching the tape to be incredibly emotional. And then the entire end of the movie was just scene after scene of characters finally kind of breaking out of the things that were keeping them from being emotionally honest with people and really helping each other. That Cole communicates to his mom that he sees dead people, and he tells her what her mom had been telling him. And I found that scene really moving. And then Malcolm himself finally being able to tell his wife, like, hey, you were never second place. Like, you were always the thing that mattered the most to me, and I'm sorry that you ever didn't feel that. I just thought it was so great. I'm a sucker for, you know, it's a little schmaltzy, but I think that's a really good thing to do. I think more people should go around and, you know, be emotionally honest with people who matter to them. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's all very good, and it's all very satisfying and fulfilling. It has a nice, it's just a nice little message in a movie about ghosts.
Yeah.
If we are going to talk about negatives now, I don't really have anything to write home about, except for I did think that the sequence where Malcolm decides he's not going to be Cole's psychiatrist anymore, and then goes and discovers that Cole is right, and that he's had past experiences with another patient, and then comes back, was a little bit unnecessary and kind of interrupted the flow of the narrative, but it's a fairly minor nitpick. I don't really have anything too major to say.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's some components of the movie that are maybe weaker than other components. While I do like Malcolm's arc, I do think it is, and this is where it's kind of hard, because I think it is somewhat hampered by the fact that they have to maneuver around the fact that he can't actually talk to his wife, that, you know, the obvious solution to him thinking that his wife is cheating on him is maybe talking to her about it. So I think there is some element where that story is weaker because they can't have some of the beats that you would normally have. But even saying that, I still think it's impressive how the movie is able to manufacture like highs and lows, where like a low where he goes to meet her at a restaurant and she doesn't talk to him because he's dead, and then she leaves, but then having highs where, like, you know, she's watching their wedding tapes, and so he's able to have a moment where he's like, oh, she does like still love me and she does care about me and I really love her. He just doesn't say it because he can't again. But yeah, that's, you know, kind of my only negative is it's like, yeah, some parts of the movie aren't as fantastic as other parts.
Well, in that case, assuming that there's nothing else, let's slap a rating or two onto this movie. I think this movie's great. I think that in light of how good this movie is, and to a slightly lesser extent, how good Unbreakable is, I understand why M. Night keeps on getting work. this is a really good story with really good characters. Technical elements are immaculate. Aside from like minor issues with occasional pacing, I don't know, stumbles. There's not really, excuse me, much to, there's not really anything to prevent me from recommending this movie to people. I'm going to give it an A.
Wow. Yeah, I think I've talked myself up even more on this movie. I think it's a ton of fun. This is one of those movies that I just love for the joy of seeing a well constructed movie on screen, that it was just, I was getting a kick out of seeing all of the tricks he was using to perpetuate the twist, all of the tricks he was using to make the scary stuff scary. I was just thoroughly enjoying this movie. It's not a perfect movie because not every moment in it is like flawless, but this is so, so good. I'm gonna give it a 9.1 out of 10.
Alrighty. Good stuff. That's a clear thumbs up from Jones at the Movies. And speaking of thumbs up, Nathan, what's another movie that you would give a thumbs up to that you would also put alongside The Sixth Sense if someone was like, I've just watched The Sixth Sense and I want to watch something similar but also very good. What can you do for me? Help me, Nathan. Please. Nathan, help them.
All right. Well, we'll see if we end up doing the same movie, because I'm going to do another movie that I also really just love for the joy of seeing a well-constructed movie that's trying to trick you. I'm going to do Christopher Nolan's The Prestige, which I don't think I have to go into a ton of detail about this. It's Christopher Nolan. And this is a movie that I think I kind of got a little harsh on in my younger years, that I first saw it and I was like, it was great. And then I was trying to be cool and edgy and being like, nah, it's not great. And I've rewatched it a couple times recently just because friends have wanted to watch it. And I'm back to, I think it's great. I think it's a really good movie. I think it's a ton of fun. And much like this movie, it's just a lot of fun seeing all of the tricks that old Christopher is using to trick us. Although in some sense, he says it at the beginning of the movie, you want to be tricked. You want to come in and have the joy of seeing something pulled off in front of you. And I think this movie very much has that emotion for me, that I just love seeing all of it play out. There's a couple moments in here that I just cackle because it's so fun. What the movie is doing. I love the second time. I'm not going to say the moment because I don't want to spoil it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's very, very good.
Okay, then. We are not recommending the same movie because that never even occurred to me as an option. My recommendation is something that I'm fairly certain Nathan has not seen, and that is the somewhat little known, or at least didn't make a huge impact, movie. I literally just... I had a bit of a brain fart about the precise wording of the title. Gosh dang it. Okay, I'm just gonna redo that. The movie that I'm talking about is A Monster Calls. This is like 2016, I think. Yes, 2016 movie based on a book. It doesn't have a twist. I'll just say that right up front. Doesn't have a twist. So there's nothing to spoil here. The basic plot is that it follows a young boy, much like in The Sixth Sense, who's having a little bit of a supernatural encounter with a monster, a very large, very intimidating tree monster, voiced by Liam Neeson, who is telling him these stories. And in the background, the young boy's mother is dying from some form of cancer. And it's unclear if the monster is there to help or to hurt. This movie is really good. The reason I'm recommending it is kind of twofold. One, for the young boy going through hard times with a bit of a supernatural twist to it. And also because I think that, like in The Sixth Sense, this movie survives so much on the characters because, I mean, you don't need me to tell you that having someone be in the throes of death is a very difficult situation that can lead people to make some very poor decisions. And there's a lot of that happening, but again, the movie comes back around to people helping each other out, people supporting each other, and I think that the monster looks really cool, and it's voiced by Liam Neeson, who has a great voice. And there's a quote from this movie. This is something that I won't spoil, but there's a quote that the monster says at like a really dramatic moment, and it's just so it is hype, man, because it's coming at, well, yeah, I'm not gonna spoil it, but it's something, the point is that it's something that I quote to myself very often, usually apropos of nothing, just because I like thinking about the way it sounded and the way the moment was constructed. So go ahead and watch that, and you will be well satisfied.
Well, yeah, that we went in kind of different directions here, but I've heard of the movie, haven't seen it, so can't second it.
Well, Nathan, what you can second, and I know that you will, because you always do, is that life is hard and full of disappointments.
That's not true at all. The only disappointment you'll experience is if you choose to go to Megalopolis or Joker 2 this weekend, I'm fairly certain I can say you'll be disappointed. Although maybe not, depending on what you want out of a movie. Hopefully I won't be disappointed when I go and see it. But next week, we're going to have another brand new episode. Super excited for it. We'll be able to bring you some of our thoughts on, I'll be able to give you my thoughts on Megalopolis. If you want Elliot's thoughts, check out the blog for a new review. If you have a movie you want to request, send us an email. And just be excited for next week and another brand new episode of Magellan's at the Movies.